This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and the news business. Lipstick, pit bulls and pigs, polls and the Palin effect. It's past time for another visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Was born before women could vote. My daughter got to vote for her mother for president.
But I'm the decider.
McCain protests a sexist smear. Obama denounces phony outrage. Palin gives the GOP a big bounce. A comedian wins the Senate primary in Minnesota. Charlie Rangel owes Uncle Sam $5,000. On Wednesday's NPR political junkie, and Ken Rudin joins us here at the Newseum to talk about the presidential campaign in particular and politics in general. And there's a whole lot to chew on this week. For much of this hour, we'll focus on money, mechanics, swing states, new voters, and ground wars, how both campaigns plan to win 270 electoral votes in 51 separate elections. But we'll start with the news of the week. And as always, Ken starts us off with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Here's a question. This is a tough one. Many people may not know the answer to this. What is the name of the Democratic nominee for vice president? No, I'm kidding. Nobody talks about him anymore. Okay, here's a trivia question. Sarah Palin had been the mayor of Wasilla before she was elected governor. Who was the last vice president to serve as a mayor?
If you think you know the last vice president to also serve as a mayor before he was elected vice president?
Before he was elected vice president.
Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'd also like to welcome the audience here with us at the Newseum. And thanks very much for coming in today. But, Ken, now we need to talk about some of this back and forth over this amazing phenomenon called Sarah Palin.
Amazing and phenomenal are the exact words because, first of all, going into the Republican convention, the Republicans were running really between the tail between their legs. They were disheartened. The polls showed that Barack Obama had a lead in many of the key swing states, and John McCain had trouble rallying his base behind him. The introduction of Sarah Palin and her speech last Wednesday, I guess it was just only a week ago. It was amazing. In St. Paul, just really re-energized the party. And one poll, I mean, USA Today Gallup poll, had him leading Barack Obama by 10 points among likely voters. White women in a Washington poll, Barack Obama had an 8-point lead, and now John McCain has a 12-point lead among white women. Everything seems to be turning around. Republicans are running with more and more confidence. There was a woman yesterday, her name is Jennifer Horn, who was thought to be an underdog in New Hampshire running in the Republican primary in the 2nd District. She won the primary because she was portraying herself as a hockey mom, that kind of person. So the Sarah Palin effect has taken a hold, and the McCain campaign seems to be running the entire dialogue. It seems like Biden and Obama don't know really how to deal with this.
Well, you mentioned that one poll that had McCain up by 10 points overall. Most of the polls, though, and one out today, the Wall Street Journal, NBC poll, has it just about dead even.
Right, it is dead even, and of course the most important thing, and we'll talk about this later, is obviously it's not a national election, as you always say. It's a 50 states plus the District of Columbia. That's where the election will be won or lost, and those polls still have tightened very much too. States that Barack Obama was thought to win kind of handily, Pennsylvania, Michigan, have tightened. Democrats are a little nervous.
And the advertising that both camps are doing is now reflecting the significance. It's amazing how much more quickly ads are coming up these days, but reflecting the significance of the maverick stance by the Republicans, their change platform. And here's an ad out just this week.
The original Mavericks. He fights pork barrel spending. She stopped the bridge to nowhere. He took on the drug industry. She took on big oil. He battled Republicans and reformed Washington. She battled Republicans and reformed Alaska. They'll make history. They'll change Washington. McCain Palin. Real change.
And the Democrats are quick to fire back with another ad that's basically a maverick schmaverick.
They call themselves Mavericks. Whoa.
Truth is, they're anything but. John McCain is hardly a maverick when 7 of his top campaign advisors are Washington lobbyists. He's no maverick when he votes with Bush 90% of the time. And Sarah Palin's no maverick either. She was for the bridge to nowhere before she was against it. Politicians lying about their records, you don't call that maverick. You call it more of the same.
I want to know who writes the music for those ads. It's great.
James Garner, I think, when he was Maverick. But what's interesting, again, is that we're talking about John McCain's slogan of Maverick. We're not talking about, once upon a time, it was about Barack Obama's ability to bring change to Washington. No longer are we talking about what the Democrats can do. Both parties are talking about what the Republicans can do or will
or
not
can't
do.
Or yeah, can't do. Yeah, the Democrats on the defensive,
exactly.
Republicans on the attack. Let's see if we get some answers to our trivia question again. Who was the last vice president to serve as a mayor? And let's see if we can go to Rod. And Rod's with us from Pacifica, California.
Yes, sir. Chester A. Arthur.
Was the mayor of New York City.
No, he wasn't.
No, he was the customs.
Yes, he was not mayor, no.
He was more powerful than the mayor.
Actually, there were only 3 presidents in history who were mayor, and the most recent president, as you well remember, Neil, was Calvin Coolidge, who was the mayor of Northampton, Massachusetts.
That's right.
So it's more recent than that, but more recent.
And we're looking for vice president.
And Chester Allen Arthur was not a mayor.
Thanks very much for the call, Rod. Let's see if we can try now to... This is... Athol with us from Salem in Georgia. Shiloh, Georgia, excuse me.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Well, wonderful. How about Spiro T. Agnew?
Spiro Agnew was the county executive of Baltimore County in Maryland before he became governor, but he was never mayor.
Sorry about that.
Nice try, though.
But I believe he was elected mayor while he was in prison. I think that's possible.
Mayor of his cell block.
That's very possible, yes.
Let's see if we can try. This is Jerry. Jerry with us from... hard to read when these turn red. Where are you from, Jerry, in Illinois?
McChesney Park, Illinois. That's next to Rockford, Illinois, north central Illinois.
Okay, Jerry, well, what's your guess?
My guess would be Theodore Roosevelt back in 1900.
Theodore Roosevelt ran for mayor of New York City, but was not elected. He was never mayor. Of course, he was governor of New York before he was vice president.
And
president.
Police commissioner.
That's right, but he was never...
He was never mayor.
Never mayor.
I read my history wrong, so I don't win anybody's... voice on my answering machine.
No.
The ottoman or the love seat, you don't get that.
Actually, since you got it wrong, you do get Ken's voice on your answering machine. That's
thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Let's see if we can go to Mary. I can read that name. Mary with us from Leavenworth in Kansas.
Okay. Was it Harry Truman?
No. Harry Truman was Eastern District Court judge before he was senator from Missouri. But no, he was never mayor.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Mary. And let's see if we can go now to Liz. And Liz is with us from Salem in Oregon.
Hi there. I think it was Hubert Humphrey. And Hubert Humphrey was the guy that was mayor in 48 when he gave the civil rights speech and the Dixiecrats walked out.
That's exactly right. He was mayor of Minneapolis.
Mary gets the prize.
It's one of the great speeches in convention history, a very impassioned speech on the behalf of civil rights. And as Mary says, you know, a lot of
My
Southerners walked out of Liz. That's right. Exactly.
That's right. Liz.
I know the mayor, but not the
Liz's
name.
The caller.
Exactly,
yeah, the,
right.
The name you heard 5 seconds
right.
ago.
And Strom Thurmond is one of those people who walked out and formed a third party running for president that year.
Liz, you win our no prize this week. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. A lot of other stuff to talk about. Political news. The Detroit mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, since we were last on the air, denied all these rumors that he had lied under oath. And then, well, he turned out that he pleaded guilty.
I mean, he had an affair with the top aide, and that just seems like kind of a picayune thing. But, of course, the city wound up spending millions of dollars to hush up that affair. There was a lot of settlement out of court. And finally, the governor, actually Jennifer Granholm, intervened and basically forced him out. It's probably good news for the Obama campaign because they were going to be, you know, saying, "Well, how do you feel about Kwame Kilpatrick?" And no longer will that be an issue.
Speaking of Democrats in trouble, Charlie Rangel, the congressman from Harlem, admitted to owing about $5,000 to the IRS for failing to report income on his returns, and says he takes personal responsibility for his actions.
Well, he's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, who writes all the tax laws, and of course, it's another embarrassment for the Democrats, and a lot of Republicans are pointing out a lot of Democrats who had taken money from Charlie Rangel and his PACs. I think it's a minor blip, but it's something that the Democrats didn't need if they want to go on the offensive.
And speaking of politicians in trouble, Ted Stevens, the Republican governor from Alaska, who goes on trial.
Senator, going
on trial later this month, I think, is scheduled to anyway. Doing well in the polls in Alaska.
Well, not well, but since Sarah Palin was picked as a running mate, of course, Sarah Palin being from Alaska, and the two of them have really never been that close, but it's given the Republican Party a boost in many states, including Alaska. Ted Stevens had been running behind Mark Begich. No Democrat has won a Senate seat in Alaska in over 30 years, but and Ted Stevens is still in trouble under indictment, but he did get a boost with Palin on the ticket.
And in Minnesota, the incumbent Republican Senator Norm Coleman, well, he now knows he's going to be facing Al Franken as his opposition.
Right. I mean, Franken had been nominated by the party several months ago, but yesterday's primary made it official. He dispatched with six other opponents with very little consequence. But again, the issue is less about Iraq, President Bush, and Norm Coleman, as we once thought it would be, and more on Al Franken and his past incendiary statements, misogynist statements, things like that, which are not playing well in Minnesota.
Hemi-semi-demi-democrat Joe Lieberman gets the cold shoulder when he comes back to Congress.
Well, you know something, I mean, for a so-called Democrat to speak before the Republican National Convention, endorse John McCain, and in other speeches criticize Barack Obama, he's basically, they said that he cannot attend any more Democratic lunches. I think it's mutual. I don't think he'd want to be there, but you wonder whether he'll still be committee chairman. He's the chairman of Homeland Security. When the Democrats pick up more seats in November, as we expect them to do, whether Lieberman, one, will still be a committee chairman, and two, still be in the Democratic Party.
And quickly, independent candidates are meeting here in Washington today, and Ron Paul said that he'd gotten a call from Phil Graham, a surrogate for John McCain, saying, you better endorse John McCain.
Right, and he said absolutely not, and he's urging his supporters to support any, to advise him where to go with any of the third-party candidates, Cynthia McKinney on the Green Party, Bob Barr on the Libertarian Party, things like that.
Bob Barr was supposed to attend that conference of third-party candidates. He skipped it and held a news conference.
Held his own. That's exactly right.
There's the third parties for you. Anyway, Ken Rudin will stay with us, our political junkie. Up next, we're going to focus on the next 8 weeks on how to win this election. If you live in a state where the campaign is competitive this year, tell us what you're seeing. Are you seeing ads tailored for your state? Are there specific ads on the radio? Are local campaign offices opening up? Are you getting phone calls? 800-989-8255 is the number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can send us, you can check out the web at 2npr.org/blogofthenation. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're broadcasting from the Knight Studio at the Newseum. It's possible that McCain staffer Rick Davis is right and this election will be decided by what people think of the candidates' personalities. Issues will be critical for many voters, but there are other critical factors that will also decide who wins this election. Money and how it's managed, the very different ways both parties conduct get out their vote efforts, expanding the electorate, deciding which states to fight in and which to let go. For the remainder of this hour, we want to hear from those of you in swing states to report on what you are seeing. Are there ads tailored just for you? Are you getting phone calls? Do you see McCain or Obama campaign offices opening up? Are the candidates themselves coming to town? Tell us what you're seeing. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Political junkie Ken Rudin is still with us, and we'll check with reporters in two swing states a bit later. Ken, the first thing listeners, I guess, have to remember, can't say it often enough, these are 51 separate elections.
Right. When Howard Dean was elected Democratic National Chairman, he said that we can no longer have a 14-state strategy, which is basically what Al Gore and John Kerry looked at in the last two elections. They focused on 14 states where they could get the 270. He said it's a 50-state election, but ultimately it's no longer a 50-state election. It's still the same 14 to 18 states. The difference this year is that there seems to be more George W. Bush states that could fall into Democratic hands than there are Kerry states that can fall into McCain's hands. So at this point, I think if you look at the map, if you look at state by state, Barack Obama still has a lead, and he's closer to 270 than John McCain is.
And one example of that might be, for example, the state of Virginia, which went, of course, for George W. Bush, and might this time, a lot of people think, go for Barack Obama.
Right. I mean, it has not gone for Democrats since Lyndon Johnson in 1964. The polls seem to be dead even, perhaps McCain with a slight lead. You have John Warner, Warner, the Mark Warner, the former governor who's running for a Senate seat, heavily favored to win there. You had him as a keynote speaker at the Democratic convention. Northern Virginia, there seems to be a really influx of Democratic votes there, and Democrats are confident of that. McCain still says that Sarah Palin, they were in, by the way, McCain and Palin were both in Fairfax, Virginia today, firing up the base, which is a Democratic part of the state, but they really feel that a lot of the states they were nervous about losing, such as Virginia, that they maybe have been cemented with Palin on the ticket.
Well, some people think that Palin, for example, has cemented Republican chances in places like Georgia, and Barack Obama has pulled his television ads out of the state of Georgia, a real good sign that they don't think it's competitive anymore. North Carolina, Montana, and at one time, Democrats thought they had a chance in Alaska.
Right. Well, Alaska, that was never realistic. But there are still so many states like Colorado,
New Mexico,
like Iowa, like Ohio, even in addition to Florida. These are states that the Republicans desperately need to win. George W. Bush carried them in 2004. Any erosion by John McCain in any of those states, again, because you know Bush only won by a bare majority in 2004, and it's of course 2000. So any electoral college a slip off for the Republicans could be very damaging. So all they really have to win, if they can pick up Colorado, New Mexico, states like that, it could make it very tough for McCain to win.
On the other hand, if John McCain can, as he hopes, he's also been campaigning very heavily, pick off Pennsylvania.
Right, Pennsylvania and Michigan, those states, Barack Obama had a sizable lead, sizable 5 to 7 points, that have since shrunken dramatically since the Republican convention. Again, this could be a blip. This could be a temporary thing. For all we know, there's, you know, everybody's investigating Sarah Palin. There's a vice presidential debate. Well, there's actually three presidential debates and a VP debate on October 2nd for the VP. So there's a lot of time left in the 55 days from now until November 4th. But right now, if John McCain can hold Ohio, which the Republicans have won in the past, and pick up either Michigan or Pennsylvania, again, that could be trouble for Obama.
Let's see if we can get a caller in on this. Phil joins us. Phil calling us from Cincinnati in Ohio.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
So the comment that I was going to make is that, like I said, I live in Cincinnati, Ohio. I saw Palin and McCain speak yesterday at a very impassioned rally in Lebanon, Ohio. Michelle Obama is here today speaking to the National Baptist Convention in downtown Cincinnati, as well as Ralph Nader was here on Monday. And Barack Obama was here yesterday at a private rally in Dayton. So we have been getting a ton of attention. And it's interesting how the campaigns have specialized their media for Ohio. See a lot of Obama media talking about how we can win Ohio, about how when John McCain John Kerry ran here in 2004, they only lost by an average of 9 votes per precinct. So it was a very close then, very close race then, and they're hoping to win it now.
Yeah, if Florida was ground zero in 2000, Ohio was certainly ground zero in 2004, and it may well be this year, too. Again, 60,000 votes. Had John Kerry gotten 60,000 more votes in Ohio, he would have been president today, and John Edwards would have been vice president.
We'll talk about that later.
Exactly. Yeah. But so obviously it's a key state. No Republican in history has ever been elected president without carrying Ohio. Both sides know what's at stake there. A lot is at stake.
Phil, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. And he may have stolen a lot of the thunder of our next guest, Mark Namek. He's a political reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and joins us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Thanks very much for coming in.
Good afternoon.
And are the candidates tailoring their media for the state of Ohio?
They are very active here, and Ohio has about 10 media markets when you consider the bordering state. So it's a tough state to campaign in, and you will hear more radio ads on conservative radio and Christian radio for Barack Obama featuring the conservative Democratic governor, Ted Strickland, in southern parts of the state. And you'll see different ads up here. But the state in general is being blanketed by many of the ads you've already talked about, and particularly the Maverick ad. I can't move in my home without seeing an ad.
It's gonna, and get used to it.
Yes.
As you look, a lot of people think the election last time in 2004 was decided, in fact, in southern Ohio.
It was. You have to look at these numbers. They're pretty stark. There's 88 counties in Ohio, and John Kerry won only the urban counties, and George Bush won the rest. He reached deep into the you know, rural counties and then the 16 suburban counties. And that is taking you into the South very much, where you're seeing John McCain. Just yesterday, they mentioned Lebanon, Ohio, which is, I'd be surprised if there is a Democrat down there somewhere, clearly to shore up the base. But what we're seeing now is Obama trying to avoid the mistakes of John Kerry. He's targeting places that they call the micropolitans, these small Democratic cities like Lima, Ohio, that are sitting in complete red county territory, hoping that that gives them a presence and allows them to tap into some local supporters to do their outreach, something that Bush did very successfully in 2004.
A key tactic for the Obama campaign has been to try to register new voters to expand the electorate, and on the theory that the more voters you bring to the polls, the more Democrats you bring to the polls.
Yeah, but that was happening in 2004, and again, George Bush was able to beat record surge in voter turnout and, you know, in these Democratic areas by reaching into those red counties. So you're seeing a really two fronts. You're seeing a strong voter outreach because, A, they've got to get them to the polls. Obama has offices on college campuses, which is believe it or not, is not as something they do. You think they would, but they haven't in the past. So you're seeing that, but he's also really trying to work the rural areas to combat that potential loss in the southern part of the state.
Ken?
Mark, obviously in 2006, a Republican scandal has led to a lot of big victories for the Democrats statewide in Ohio, and a lot of people thought that might continue into 2008, and the Republican base was disheartened. Have you seen any evidence of a Sarah Palin picking up that Republican enthusiasm?
It has, in the southern part, among the Christian conservatives, the ones that were behind, specifically the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, which was supported overwhelmingly in Ohio and is credited with maybe motivating the base, not necessarily making the difference. They, just as recently as a month ago, were still turning the cold shoulder to McCain, but I'm seeing, and I'm on some of the email lists, and you see the traffic that they have going between themselves, that there is support, which I think is why McCain has targeted there. It's worth noting that since Memorial Day, we've had Obama here 8 separate times and McCain 11 times. And McCain is also going to places like Youngstown, Ohio, a very Democratic, rich area. But he's going after these Clinton Democrats, those that, really liked her, were not so sure about Obama, has a little bit of that Reagan Democratic streak in him. And so you're seeing this strategy. I mean, they're pretty much trying to blanket the whole state, but these pockets of where they're going can really be attributed to some specific voter attitudes that I think they're picking up in their own internal polls.
Here's an email we have from Andrew in Cincinnati. I live in Cincinnati, the nexus of 3 swing states, Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. I work downtown on the same street as the McCain office here in town. I am struck, and he adds, pleased by the fact the campaign office always seems to be empty. Maybe they're giving up, he adds, one could only hope. Of course, maybe they're out trying to rustle up votes. And I was going to ask you, Mark, after the last 8 years, both parties must think they know the home number of everyone who will likely vote for them in this election.
They can also recite the directions, how to get to their homes. There's no doubt. Let's give credit to the Republican Party in Ohio for years has had the better voter list. The Democratic Party, though, since, as you noted earlier, the 2006 campaign that really put Democrats in statewide office for the first time in 16 years, the party really has caught up on that ground. I don't think you're going to see that much of a difference in this micro-targeting of their voters. The key now moves into, can they move them and can they build that same network in places traditionally not supportive of the Democrats or Republicans?
In the past, we've also seen a lot of warfare on the number of polling booths open in various parts of that state and the number of registered voters who found themselves off lists and that sort of a lot of questions about that in the past. Those questions coming up again this year in Ohio?
Absolutely, but there are a couple of things to keep in mind. I've battled often with people who believe that the election was thrown in 04 and it was rigged. And I always come back to someone, from my perspective, I've covered the boards of elections for nearly 10 years. It's always incompetence over in conspiracy. They have to deal with getting the registrations in, but they're not purging really as much as they are. I've just recently moved, and I'm still getting hit with all kinds of mail. I think they're trying to err on the conservative side. We do now have a statewide voter registration list for the first time, and it's beginning to kind of really try to sort out who's on and who's off. But I don't see that as being a major issue. I think they're going to have more problems with just getting surges of new registrations in. I know in Cuyahoga County, the largest in the state, they literally 4 years ago had to hire people, temp workers around the clock to get the registrations in by the appropriate time, and they're trying to prepare for that. They're seeking money as we speak right now from the county to do these kind of things.
As you noted, 4 years ago, both parties got record numbers of voters to the polls in places, especially like Ohio, and I assume everybody expects those records to be broken by a long shot.
Based on what we've seen since Memorial Day, and there was some talk, as you guys have mentioned earlier, that maybe the swing states like Ohio and Pennsylvania have to share the spotlight a bit with Colorado and some of the states in the Southwest. Right now, every indication from the campaigns, from what we see, is that they're still staking out Ohio. Neither one wants to give it up. As we know, Ohio's only been wrong, I think, twice in 108 years, so I think they need it.
Mark, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Mark Namek, a political reporter with the Cleveland Plain Dealer, with us from our member station WCPN in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to, this is George. George with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi, how you doing, Neil?
Very well, thanks.
Great. I would just like to ask a comment slash question. I've noticed, especially around town, more Republican field offices popping up. However, since the very beginning of the primaries, McCain's offices have had an incredible networking grassroots movement. And especially using new technology, text messaging to sort of create a web of voter support under the Obama campaign, I'm curious if the McCain campaign has any intent to just establish that type network.
So, Ken, the Obama campaign has been using a lot of text messages, a lot of email contacts. Do they have the advantage over the Republicans in that respect?
Well, it's something they've been doing early and for most of the year. The problem with Michigan, of course, is that the Democrats bypassed it. They ignored the state because of a fight with the DNC over rules. So Michigan is one of the few states in the country, few Democratic states in the country, where the Democrats are coming to the game late. They didn't have the excitement of the primary. They didn't have the candidates during the primary, and they're almost playing catch-up. But as far as those techniques, the Democrats have always been on top of that before the Republicans.
George, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Ken, let me ask you, everybody thought Barack Obama was going to have a tremendous advantage in money because he eschewed the matching funds from the federal government, and he thought he could raise a lot more money than John McCain did, but now it may not be such an advantage.
Well, and McCain, a lot of people thought that McCain would be hamstruck by taking federal money. He's only allowed to spend $84 million from now until the general election, but the Republican National Committee, a lot of 527 groups, independent spending groups, are raising a ton of money, again, especially since Palin was named to the ticket. They are almost in parity with what the Democrats are raising. And the problem for Barack Obama, since he's still raising money, he still has to spend much time going to these fundraisers, where John McCain does not have to because he can't raise any more money for his campaign.
And also, the campaign is shorter. The distance between the end of the last convention, the Republican convention ended last Thursday, and then the general election was only, I think, 60 days, and it's down to 56 now. And that's short for John McCain. Only has $83 million. You can spend it quickly.
I mean, it's amazing. We're talking about Barack Obama with $150 million and maybe both parties having $150-$200 million. That should not be enough for 55 days. That's pretty remarkable. But again, everything counts. So much is at stake. So many states are in play. And so, you know, the last thing either party wants to do is find themselves without enough money.
And we think 8 weeks to Election Day, that's not right. People can start voting, I think, in about 3 weeks. Some states have early voting that starts as soon as late September.
Well, that's interesting, too. Like Nevada, who we're going to talk to a journalist there from Nevada, but Nevada has early voting, New Mexico has early voting, and these are areas where, again, the McCain-Palin ticket has this momentum. So if people are voting early, that could be good news for the Republican Party.
So all of these mechanical things, they sound like, down in the weeds. These can really make a difference in presidential.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most people, of course, especially in the East Coast, they do wait until Election Day.
Right. Old-fashioned.
Exactly. Yeah. To vote, but But a lot of these early states, a lot of these West Coast states, Southwest states, you see a lot of early voting. Florida has early voting, too. Texas has early voting. So, a lot, again, whoever has the momentum right now, you don't even have to wait for November 4th anymore.
I saw one figure that a million people in the state of Florida had asked for early ballots.
Speaking of which, did you know that today is my mom's birthday, and she listens to us every day on WLRN?
In Miami?
Uh-huh.
Our member station there in
yes,
Miami?
Yes, today's my mom's birthday.
Your mom's birthday? Uh-huh. Really? How about that, Ken? Funny how you could work that in.
Wouldn't you think that the audience would applaud on my mom's birthday?
Would you applaud mom's birthday?
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, thank you.
I think they're applauding because we're at the end of the segment, Ken. Stay with us. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can go to the blog and see what other listeners have to say. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, our focus is on the 2008 presidential campaign and how to win this election. We want to hear from those of you in swing states to report on what you're seeing. Are there ads tailored just for you? Are you getting phone calls? Do you see McCain or Obama campaign offices? Are the candidates themselves knocking on your doors? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can check out what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, joins us every Wednesday to talk about the campaign and politics in general. He's with us here at the museum, back from the conventions in Denver and St. Paul. Here's an email question, this from Ryan. With all the polls saying it's dead even, what about the youth vote, considering a large part of Obama's following is under 35 and they don't have home phones, which is where most of the polling takes place? Does that make the polls a little less valuable?
Well, a lot of people have been saying that, although a lot of some studies have shown that people who have cell phones and people who have home phones, their responses have been the same. But talking about the youth vote, we always roll our eyes talking about the youth votes every 4 years because they don't come out. Young people don't come out. They did come out in this
in the primaries,
and they came out heavily for Barack Obama. And one of the things the Obama campaign is really hoping for is a repeat performance for the fall. There should be no reason why they should vote in the primaries but not come out in the fall.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Bill. Bill with us from Logan in Utah.
Hello, good afternoon.
And Bill, Utah, not a swing state.
No, it's as red as they get, but apparently Colorado is a swing state. My wife's a registered Democrat and on the Obama campaign email, whatever it is. But anyway, she got an email that she found offense to that asked her to travel to Colorado and campaign there since Utah's a lost cause.
And she took offense at that?
Well, What's her value as a Democratic or an Obama supporter, and you know, in the grand scheme of things, I guess, and I can understand Obama's campaign's point of view, but she still lives in Utah, and apparently there's nothing that she can do in Utah. So,
well, it's not going to make much difference campaigning for Obama in Utah.
No, and we understand that. I came home from classes last night. And she goes, "Guess what I got?" So,
well, thanks very much for the call, Bill.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Lenny. Lenny in Sebula in Iowa.
Yeah, so just going down the hill. Let me pull over. I might lose the connection here, Neil.
Okay, drive carefully now.
Okay, I've got it off in 52. Well, I'm part of that old white boy hog farmers, mailmen, plumbers, teachers, went into a caucus this winter and went strong for Obama. Part of what we're seeing is all we're seeing here right now is And Obama adds for the abortion issue, which, if anything, that's a wrong direction for him and might split off the Catholic, strong Catholic communities here. That's kind of a wedge issue for them. But we do appreciate when Obama comes out on the attack on every issue, especially like the remark about the analogy of the policies that McCain has and saying that that's the same thing that Bush has had, that's just lipstick on a pig. We just love that remark.
Well, in Iowa?
in Iowa, with all the hog farmers we've got around here, they can really relate to that. Put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. You change name of a policy from McCain's economic policy is Bush's economic policy.
But let me...
If you call it change, it's still not change. It's just putting lipstick on a pig.
And you could sell a lot of lipstick for pigs in Iowa. But let me ask you, Lenny, these ads you're seeing, Obama is campaigning, doing ads on the abortion issue. Do you think he's trying to pick up those Clinton voters?
Possibly, but he should just look to what his strengths were in the caucus. His strength was his entire economic and anti-war program, or change of war program. It's not really an anti-war program. It's shifted to Afghanistan. It's so little thought, like hasn't been shown in the last 8 years as far as the international situation, but it's his entire package is what we found appealing. All right. So for him to come back on a single issue seems to be wasting whatever precious dollars he has to advertise. He should just, you know, make an appearance here and now and then, and speaking to the broad range of economic issues, and perhaps if he doesn't already, he should have on his campaign headquarters wall a scrawled note that says, "It's the economy, stupid."
Yeah, that was the Bill Clinton campaign. That was on James Carville's over his office. Anyway, Lenny, we want to get to somebody else. Lenny, we want to give somebody else a chance, but thanks very much for the call, and drive carefully again. Here's an email from Cynthia in Lincoln, Nebraska. Today, the Obama office officially opened in Omaha. Nebraska, along with Maine, is a state where the delegates can be split. Somebody always reminds me about this. The Obama campaign is hoping to get some delegates' votes out of this red state.
Electoral votes, yeah.
Electoral votes, yeah.
It's one of the states. There are five electoral votes in Nebraska. If they could win the Omaha district, the second congressional district, they can pick up one or two electoral votes. It's never happened, but again, the fact that if Barack Obama is going to win Ohio, I mean, I'm sorry, Omaha. If he's going to win Omaha, then obviously he's doing far better in the Midwest than people thought, and it could be a very big pickup. But it's never happened, even though they can split their electoral votes, they never have.
And a red state that is now thought to be in play is Nevada. Joining us now from his office in Las Vegas is Mike Meshack, a reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. And Mike Meshack, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And how does it look now in the state of Nevada?
Well, polls show that the state is tied, but if you look at the numbers and if you look at the ground games, the numbers certainly tilt to Obama. I think Ken had mentioned earlier early voting. Now, that starts in Nevada on October 18th, so the push is on. And Obama has far outpaced McCain in all aspects of his ground game thus far, but he's really put an emphasis on voter registration. His volunteers were out capitalizing on what momentum he got from his convention, registering 4,200 voters over the Labor Day weekend, 1,500 voters the previous weekend, and this all adds up to what we're seeing with Democrats now having more than a 60,000 voter advantage over Republicans in the state.
What about independents?
Independents comprise about 14%. Of the electorate here, and they're certainly an audience that both campaigns are going after.
That's pretty small. Nationwide, it's more than a third.
Yeah. I think that what you're seeing with this election is that Nevada has never gotten this level of attention in a presidential election. It's never been this important, and certainly on the Democratic side, there was so much enthusiasm with the candidates coming in for months and months and months. And you're seeing that in the voter registration and people on both sides being excited.
Nevada had one of those early primaries this year. I wonder, a lot of Latinos in Nevada, how are they breaking?
That's right. I think that they comprise about a quarter of the population in Nevada. And what we have seen since the 2006 midterms is that, well, they're primarily registering Democratic, and that they've increased their ranks, Hispanic Democrats, at least in Clark County, the population center where Las Vegas is, they've increased their ranks by 14,000 voters since the last election. And I think that certainly they broke for Clinton in the early caucus, but I think that now what you're seeing in Nevada is what you're seeing in national polls as well, and that's Hispanics going overwhelmingly for Obama.
Mike, it's Ken Rudin here. Jim Gibbons, the Republican governor, is pretty unpopular. He's been in kind of a pickle since he was elected. Is that hurting the Republican Party there as well?
The Republican Party is weaker, is in pretty much the weakest state that people can remember in recent memory right now. And Gibbons, as the standard bearer for the party, certainly has not done anything to help. The party... after, I guess, trouncing Democrats for four straight cycles, kind of just gave up in terms of maintaining that organizational machine it has. And so they're at an organizational disadvantage right now to the Democrats. And as far as morale is concerned, it's pretty low.
Does the fact that McCain and Palin both coming from the West, does that help them at all?
Certainly, it's the argument that the McCain campaign is making. They scheduled a conference call this afternoon to talk about with Nevada's junior senator, John Ensign, to talk about McCain's Western appeal, the fact that he's a Western senator, the fact that he understands issues like land use and water. But McCain himself has been a largely uninspiring figure to Republicans. Republicans in Nevada. He supports Yucca Mountain, the proposed nuclear waste repository. It's about 90 miles north of Las Vegas. At one time, he had proposed banning sports betting in Nevada, which is a huge part of our economy. But more so than those issues, he finished third in the Republican caucus in January. And when you look at exit polling, overwhelmingly the issue that really hurt him was this, you know, out in the ether, Republicans said that McCain just did not share their values. Now, I think Governor Palin helps the ticket here. Certainly, we've had one of our congressmen, Dean Heller, comment on that, saying that in the largely rural part of the state, which is his district, it helps him. That the McCain campaign has also argued that Governor Palin has energized the base and really brought a lot of energy that was previously lacking to the campaign.
Here's an email we got from Joanne in Santa Cruz, California. In regard to campaigning in other states, I live in California and I am planning on campaigning in Nevada. Unlike your caller from Utah, I think it's a terrific and highly small D democratic idea. The absurdity of the Electoral College system is that a vote in my home state doesn't much matter, so why not go and exercise my rights in another state? I know Utah is another world, but we are all Americans. You can see some people from California maybe campaigning there in Nevada for one party or the other. Mike Mishak, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Mishak, political reporter for the Las Vegas Sun, with us on the phone from his office in Las Vegas. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Joe. Joe's calling us from the Pennsylvania Turnpike in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Neil. I've actually arrived. I'm now in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
I'm glad you made it.
Thanks. Talking about Pennsylvania, which you really haven't done yet, Pennsylvania is three distinct areas. You've got Eagles Country, Steelers Country, and then the part in the middle we refer to as Kentucky. And no candidate is going to have broad enough appeal to win all of it, and Pennsylvania is already very contentious between party lines, regional lines to begin with. I think it's really going to be a wild card. I think it will be the my prediction is that Pennsylvania will be the Florida of the 2000 election.
Ken, the polls before the Republican convention showed Obama with, I think, 5-point lead in Pennsylvania.
And now down to two. At the Republican, on the floor of the Republican convention, the Pennsylvania delegates were waving, Steeler towels that said, "We're not bitter." How badly did that comment by Obama hurt, and how badly and how far behind is and what ground does Obama need to make up to win those social conservatives that make up the middle of Pennsylvania?
A tremendous amount. A lot of people riled at the bitter comment. Not so much in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, which I visited recently, not even in sort of the affluent Philadelphia suburbs, but in Reading, Allentown, Wilkesboro, Scranton, which has come up so much. People are really banging that drum quite hard.
Joe, thanks very much for the call. Glad you made it.
Sure, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this will be another caller from Pennsylvania. This is Nancy in Newtown Square.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I have been getting a lot of mail from the Republican Party for pre-registration. I got a note from Arlen Specter because one of our members of the family changed registrations from Republican to Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're up early. I mean, 5:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, you can hear ads. And one of the things I find interesting is the Maverick ad is, why aren't people making more to do that it really is a stretch with Palin, the fact that she really was for that bridge to nowhere until it was not going to happen, and then she kept the money. Aren't people interested in truth in advertising anymore?
The New York Times ran an interesting piece today that said sometimes, no, they don't seem to be. Whatever impression you make, sometimes that's the impression you carry away, even when later sometimes claims on either side are disproved.
But what's so remarkable about the Bridge to Nowhere thing is that Sarah Palin says it every day that she stood up to Congress, she said no, and yet every day the media, the newspapers, the television say that's not true. She was willing to take the money until the end, and yet she still says it every day.
But according to that call, a very active Republican campaign in Pennsylvania. Diane with us from Conifer in Colorado.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment that our little town in Colorado has never really seen a lot of action politically. We're about an hour outside of Denver, but this year we have an Obama office, and it's 5 minutes from our house, and so my teenage son is actually working there as an intern, and the office is run by a woman who's 24 years old. So it's kind of interesting for us older people to be in there with all these young kids. But what's been really interesting to me is that it's there at all, that it exists. During the Kerry campaign, we did a little work, my family, but really there really just wasn't a lot of interest. And so the fact that they're there is my big point. The other thing is I took my daughter back to college last week, and she's in Virginia in Lynchburg. Lynchburg's a bigger town, of course, than, you know, Conifer, but riding through town, sure enough, there was the Obama office. So it gave me a sense that they're out there. You know, we've moved tentacles into all of these different places.
Well, it's interesting. You got this email from Andy in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Obama has opened offices in other rural small towns in Virginia. Harrisonburg is a college town, James Madison University, and another Obama office was opened in Blacksburg, where Virginia Tech is. Maybe the concentration of younger voters in these towns is part of his strategy. It certainly is. Local registrars in both towns are now spreading misinformation to students about absentee voting. They've cautioned students they may lose their financial aid if they register to vote absentee because they're giving up their home residency. So that became an issue to some degree in the Iowa caucuses too, Ken, and students from various other parts of the country going to vote for Obama in Iowa.
But what's interesting also is that we keep talking about Iowa, New Mexico, and Colorado, and people say, why are we spending so much time on this? Had Al Gore won New Hampshire and it's 4 electoral votes in 2000, he would have been president. Every state matters, especially in this close election.
And every Wednesday matters when you can hear the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We'll be back next week from the museum. You can also read Ken's Political Junkie column at npr.org this week on Do the Vice Presidential Candidates Actually Matter? We've been talking that way. Ken, thanks very much for the time.
Thanks, Neil.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.